Muito bom dia.
Good morning. All of you, good morning and welcome. President of the Parliamentary Assembly of the OSCE, Secretary General of the Parliamentary Assembly of the OSCE, Madam President, Madam of the Delegation of the Portuguese Assembly of the Republic, Vice President of the Parliament of Norway, Secretary of State for Defense, ladies and gentlemen, members of Parliament, ambassadors, and members of the diplomatic corps, authorities, dear guests, ladies and gentlemen. The digital resilience that brings us here to this conference today, promoted in the framework of the OSCE regarding a state, a democratic state, is the topic of that brings us here today. Internet, as we know, is a factor of promotion for expression and also to broadcast ideas. It has put people together and get and offer cultures to be known. It's also very impressive, the contribution of Internet to the economy, the digital economy of our time, at the level of innovation of products and also to facilitate trade and financial transactions. But we should not forget that these opportunities are followed by risks and threats. Several events, recent events, have contributed. So we passed from the optimistic speech or discourse to the need of having a realistic discourse regarding Internet and its impacts. I'd like to greet the Parliamentary Assembly of the OSCE to this initiative. The safety and security of cyberspace is one of the pillars of any national strategy. And this conference of Lisbon is another step towards the development of a true culture of cyber security in Portugal and in the womb of OSCE. The globalization process transformed developed society into information societies. In this type of societies and environment, the potential strategic of each state is a lot to do with knowledge and innovation. Internet has become, therefore, a stage for global dispute for power and for knowledge. Therefore, cybersecurity is today a branch of strategy of security and defense, as are the traditional branches of the armed forces. And for the security of the territories of the waters and the airspace and the outer space, we must also add the security of cyberspace. Today, everywhere world round is online. The cyberspace is open to each and everyone, and that brings obvious menaces, transnational and transborder threats. And the Internet is also the basis that the communications between governments and armed forces and information services are all based. So extremist propaganda actions and anti-democratic actions and organized crime and also support to terrorist attacks also go through online actions demanding an adequate response. In the times that we live now, there are suspicions of parastate interference in electoral processes through digital means. The personal data are no longer, or seen that they are not in safety. involving great companies of the digital sector. All this new reality compels the European Union, NATO, OSCE, and the national states to prepare better and better to face this threat. Unfortunately, the threats go faster than the ability to the states to respond and of their international organizations. And so more international cooperation is needed and a higher level of culture of cyber security, and in particular between the responsible entities for the management of critical structure. This conference is aimed at this, the development of this new culture of security. Here we have international experts and political responsibles, judicial and military responsibles. And I'm sure if we gather all these entities and we mobilize all the international and national resources, we'll be able to face successfully these threats and attaining the objectives of resilience. Resilience that in the digital society cannot forget the fundamental side of data protection, in particular of the personal data that concern the and regard the private life and without respect for the autonomy of a person, and also without preserving the autonomy of institutions. We have no open society, and without no open society, there is no democracy, freedom, and security. Therefore, these are the fundamentals of our current challenges to face this. I wish you all good work, and thank you for your participation.
Tem agora a palavra o
presidente of the OSCE Parliamentary Assembly has the floor.
Colleagues, first of all, let me say I'm very much pleased to be here in Portugal in this historical building for a very timely and important conference. And I'd like to thank our Portuguese colleagues, authorities of Portugal, here is the Vice President of the Assembly and all the leadership, of course, our delegation, the Parliamentary Assembly for this initiative, and personally Vice President Isabel Santos. I think it's really very useful to have this debate here, discussion here in this hall, and I'm very pleased to see here a lot of very important people in the field, politicians, of course, distinguished members of Portuguese Parliament, our colleagues from the Parliamentary Assembly, leaders of our secretariat, ambassadors. I know that we have also as guests representatives of civil society and young people, so everybody is interested in the topic because it's really affecting the lives of every citizen. In this era of dominated by debates about fake news, cybersecurity, online radicalization, and data protection, it is essential that we come together to discuss these issues. In the OSCE Parliamentary Assembly, we've been increasingly focused on cybersecurity for the past decade. We adopted our first resolution on the topic in 2008, identifying cyber threats as some of the most serious security challenges of our time. Over the past 10 years, these challenges have only grown. Our members will recall that during our latest autumn meeting in Andorra, we discussed how cyber threats can jeopardize the way of the life of modern societies and the whole of civilization. In our increasingly digital world, armed conflicts are not the only breeding ground for threats against governments and citizens. In cyberspace, we can see new challenges emerging and old challenges evolving. Whether the issue is child sexual exploitation, terrorist recruitment, or crimes as identity theft and fraud, the internet offers new opportunities for criminals and extremists. We must respond effectively and ensure that the response is proportionate. Currently, there are policies being pursued by the United States and European Union to relax international rules for cross-border law enforcement investigations of cybercrime. While these rule changes might be well-intentioned, what we don't want is a race to the bottom of weaker privacy protections around the globe. While addressing these problems, in other words, we must always uphold the highest standards of respect for fundamental freedoms. Recognizing the essential role of cooperation between governments to cope with the modern security risks, we should revise existing legal frameworks and harmonize relevant legislation to make international cooperation more effective and efficient. All actors and stakeholders must search in good faith for solutions based on international law in a way that does not infringe on freedom of information or individual privacy. Although governments often see cybercrime through the lens of threat to state security, whether the protection of digital infrastructure or ensuring the protection of the state of state secrets, our citizens are no less vulnerable to cybercrime and breaches of their personal data. We saw recently the damage done by the Cambridge Analytica data breach, which affected millions of Facebook users. These people had their personal data collected and inappropriately sold to politicians to advance political agendas and careers. The scandal raised important legal and ethical questions about the nature of privacy in a digital age. For example, what are the implications for democracy when extremely detailed personal data can be used by skilled political operatives to influence public opinion? While Facebook has been in the spotlight, the sweeping data collection is an issue throughout cyberspace, and this raises the fundamental question of whether internet users should expect any privacy protection at all. So, we all know, you know, a lot of sayings about new technologies, and technology is not good or bad in and of itself. It depends on the people who use it. When intimate and detailed knowledge of citizens' views can be collected and sold to the highest bidders, citizens become prime targets for fake news campaigns and propaganda. This, in turn, can have dire consequences for functioning of democracy. There has been much speculation that recent elections have also been the target of cyber attacks. Here I see President of the IFES, Mr. Sweeney, and we welcome that our American friends are here in Washington. During our visit, we discussed the issue of linkage between cybersecurity and election process, and I'm very happy that Mr. Sweeney and colleagues will take part in the discussions on the topic. And whether electoral outcomes have been affected is not a matter of debate, what is not a matter of debate is that this possibility of troubling. And even in past elections we have been secure, there's no reason to assume that future elections will remain secure. So we must make every effort in protecting our electoral systems from hacking. I hope that in this forum we can exchange best practices, develop confidence-building measures, identify the most effective ways to build resilient democracies and protect against cyber threats while also protecting freedom of information and personal privacy. I have some the quotes in my speech, and it's always good to refer to wise people. As one British writer said, there are two ways of meeting difficulties. You alter the difficulties, or you alter yourself to meet them. So I think we can all agree that technology has offered great advances for our civilization. It has helped to connect the world, share knowledge, promote commerce, and to advance democratic development. Even here, you know, in our assembly, in this parliament, we are all connected through our different devices, smartphones, and unable to change and to gather information as fast as ever. This is a year also of digital diplomacy, and we should realize that the internet also could help to solve important foreign policy problems. Dear colleagues and friends, what we now must do is make sure that this technology is secure so that the challenges of the digital age are managed in a way that ensures both security and liberty. It is up to us to make sure that modern technology remains a useful servant and not a dangerous master. So I once again like to thank our Portuguese hosts, Parliament of Portugal, its leadership, Isabel, and all the team. Here I see Neil Susanna, also one of the leaders of our assembly, and some other friends of Portuguese Parliament. We appreciate that. We appreciate your hospitality. We appreciate your initiative, and I look forward to exploring these topics in more details with you all. Thank you very much, and wish you a very fruitful conference.
Dou agora com todo gosto a palavra à...
So I would not like to give the floor to the president of the Portuguese delegation, MP Isabel Santos. Thank you. Dear Vice President of the Portuguese Parliament, Mr. Jorge Lacão, His Excellency Mr. George Tseratelli, His Excellency the General Secretary of the Mr. Roberto Montella, Excellencies, dear guests, dear colleagues, this is a reason for great joy to welcome you all to the first Lisbon Conference on the Parliamentary Conference of the OSCE. One of the biggest challenges with which international organizations are confronted with is based on creating proximity in the way they approach different topics and the discussion that they carry out in parliaments and in the societies of the member countries. So as an answer, the Portuguese delegation is together with the OSCE decided to launch the Lisbon conferences of the parliamentary assembly of the OSCE, and every 2 years we will try to meet on the parliament, trying to meet elements of different member states, experts, researchers, journalists, students, members of the civil society, in order to touch upon those topics which touch our today's agenda. And this is what is going to happen today with all of our knowledge. Although we come from different origins in terms of geography, from Kyrgyzstan to the USA, by approaching issues connecting to security, cyberspace, under the title of Digital Resilience of a Democratic State. If we only were to dive the pertinence about this conference, the multiple cases that have been taken to light after the bad use of cyberspace, which puts at stake the fundamental rights of citizens, the safety of democracies, and also by jeopardizing the dialogue of states, would have taken away all questions or doubts. We live in times that are strongly marked by technology progress, where information technology are more and more present in everyday light, in everyday actions through a smartphone or a computer, to have updated news from all over the body, to manage personal contacts, to simply purchase a book on a simple click has become all too common for a greater number of us. And one way or the other, all of us are present in a computer platform or a database. And a part of the multiple benefits and the advantages, new technologies has also brought about uncertainty and ambiguity. And the way Henry Kissinger said that the omnipresent of the networks in fields like the military may be very beneficial, but it has also revolutionize the vulnerabilities. A portable or laptop may simply have consequences at a world level, as a lonely player may have the possibility of destroying fundamental institutions, because cyber attacks are a true threat to all companies, affecting the companies, governments, and private sphere. In times where many of the geopolitical antagonisms transfer to the virtual space in a very strong chess game in terms of data processing and manipulation of all cases, such as, for instance, elections, the ambiguity in terms of the cyberspace, this has been used to feed the threat and the mistrust at a global level, and causes the subject not to be underrated. And in view of this, the OSCE has become a dialogue platform in which will build confidence measures in order to use the by making sure that they are far more foreseeable, and by offering concrete tools to facilitate dialogue and to promote the sharing of good practices or best practice by generating better protection against cyber threat, and by keeping cyber space open, free, and safe. In parallel, the OSCE and its institutions are focused in facing cyber threats coming from non-state agencies, such as those that arise from the organized crime and terrorism. Throughout the year, the Parliamentary Assembly of the OSCE has produced a number of resolutions and recommendations by approaching cybersecurity and cybercrime, by underlining the risk of the modern violations of security. As an illustration of this topic, and the following of discussion of the OSCE Parliamentary Assembly is the number of texts that has been approved since 2008, and this is a total of 12 texts. And we also underline that armed conflicts are not the only threat to this regional security. The emergence of the cyberspace has brought about a new space for conflict. We have also to gather effort in order to fight against the abuse of the use of ICTs by criminal networks and by criminal authorities. No one will ever dare think that the cyberspace space will be unbreakable to any evil use, but what we want is to make it even more resilient by making democracies also more resilient. And this is a duty for all of us who are experts, politicians, citizens. And I'm sure that the conclusions of these different discussions that will be held throughout the day will echo in the declarations to be produced in the OSCE summer conference in Berlin. And this will be a factor that will only enrich such meeting. And now I am supposed to acknowledge Mr. Georges Lacombe, the Vice President of this conference, for hosting this event of the OSCE, the delegation of the, and also on the way in which he has hosted this initiative by wishing him the votes of a very quick recovery. And to the president of Mr. George Tetzarelli, the MP of Georgia, and to all the members of the International Secretary, thank you very much for your contribution in all times. To the different range of speakers, moderators, rapporteurs, all participants who converge in Lisbon, the strength of this great Euro-Atlantic platform for cooperation, security, democracy, and development that honor us with their presence. Thank you very much. And to all of you who on a daily basis and the different services of the Parliament do ensure the back offices of this institution, and without whom this event would not be possible, I would like to address you my gratefulness to you, and I would like to wish you all a very fruitful working session. Thank you very much.
Declaro assim encerrada esta sessão de abertura.
So I would like to close this opening session, and now we may start the first panel, and we will be renewing this panel. Thank you very much, and have all very nice work.
Message. I'm sorry I can't be with you in person. The topic you're discussing today is a key one. Cyber threats and cyber-enabled threats are among the most significant challenges to our security. That's partly because we now rely on technology in our everyday lives to an unparalleled extent. For the news we read, for staying in touch with each other, for shopping, banking, all sorts of everyday activities. The internet has provided us with incredible opportunities. But it's becoming increasingly apparent that it also has a flip and darker side. Cyber attacks are becoming more frequent and more damaging in their impact. They're easy to perpetrate, hard to trace and attribute, while the list of potential targets is so long that any would-be cyber attacker is, frankly, spoiled for choice. The motives behind such attacks are often financial, but we have also seen attacks driven by political and strategic ends. They're aimed at disrupting our democratic institutions and interfering with our elections. In response, we're continuing our work to close down the space for all those who seek to harm us, whether they are cybercriminals, terrorists, or indeed non-state and state actors. As in other areas of security, it's national governments and public authorities that are on the front line. But the cross-border nature of the cyber threat means that cooperation has never been more important. And the European Union has a clear role to play in helping, assisting efforts both at home and internationally. That's why the Commission proposed a package of measures last September to strengthen our cyber resilience, build effective deterrence, and help deliver credible cyber defence and international cooperation. Strengthening resilience means making ourselves both harder to attack and having the systems, structures, and procedures in place to enable us to react rapidly and in a coordinated way when there is a major attack. This first means an effective implementation of the NIS directive, for which the deadline is tomorrow, by the way, which should ensure key sectors are better protected across Europe and that member states cooperate more effectively. To complement these important first steps, we've proposed the definition of a game plan on how to respond to large-scale incidents and to expand the mandate of the existing EU Network and Information Security Agency, ENISA, into a genuine, effective EU cybersecurity agency. With billions of new connected devices set to come to market, it's also critical to raise cybersecurity standards and promote security by design. This is why our proposal includes a certification framework for products and services. We're also investing in skills beyond basic cyber hygiene, as well as in research to stay ahead of those who are looking to attack us and cause us harm. The private sector needs to play its full role too. Switch from being a security consumer to being a security provider. From seeing security not as a cost, but as a factor of competitive advantage. Aside from becoming more resilient, we also need to build effective deterrence. We need to make sure, for example, that cybercrime does not pay. That means making it easier to detect and to prosecute. To this end, we took a significant step last month with proposals to make access to electronic evidence, wherever it is, easier, to improve the ability of law enforcement to investigate and prosecute offences, including terrorism and cybercrime, the evidence for which is often digital and increasingly stored in different countries. Our work also includes countering the use of cyber means to spread propaganda and disinformation or to incite terrorism. To combat this, the Commission brought forward a range of measures a couple of weeks ago against disinformation and fake news online. In doing so, we sent a clear and strong message to internet platforms, Facebook, Twitter and others, who make, frankly, so much money from our online lives. They have a key role to play in helping us to counter disinformation. And we hope to see significant progress in the next few months. What we are not doing is asking them to judge what is true or not, or in any way to censor content. But we do want more transparency, traceability and accountability online, and platforms need to help deliver this. Our news feeds should tell us clearly when content has been paid for and by whom, when it has been distributed via bots rather than other users, and why we're being shown certain particular content. In addition, we will strengthen the work done by fact checkers. We will support quality journalism, and we will promote media literacy and critical thinking. It's an urgent issue, especially in the context of upcoming elections, such as those across Europe for the European Parliament next May. We've already seen how some elections, in the US, in France, for example, have been targeted by malicious actors in the past. Some of this attempted interference appears to involve foreign actors. We need to be clear, such outside interference through disinformation and manipulation is not acceptable. We've also taken action to combat terrorist content online. Unlike the challenge of disinformation, where manipulation and coercion are the order of the day, with terrorist content, there is a clear dividing line. Terrorist content is illegal, whether it's happening online or offline. You wouldn't be allowed to go around the centre of Lisbon handing out terrorist pamphlets, and you shouldn't be allowed to spread that material on the internet either. Here we're also putting real pressure on the big internet platforms to step up and speed up their work. In March, the Commission tabled a set of operational recommendations, including that terrorist content should be removed within 1 hour after being flagged by law enforcement, and that platforms should use automated tools to detect this content and prevent it from being re-uploaded. We prefer to work with the platforms on a voluntary basis, but we're ready to look again at regulation or legislation if we don't get the rapid progress we need. This is a brief overview of our work at European level to increase our digital resilience and to build confidence amongst our citizens that their online lives are more secure. We're determined to make progress, but this is not work that has an end date. We're going to need to maintain our efforts and reinforce our cooperation in the face of a growing and evolving cyber threat. Thank you. Thanks for your focus on these issues. It's really important.
Good morning. We have started with this recorded message, which is quite an important one. One, because this touches one of our fields of actions, which is journalism. Probably what we require is cyber education, and also we should probably deserve more and more education at this level. And this will allow us to be more transparent and to be much more ethical in order to come up with the truth, and a truth which shall be far more frequent in the net and in this new platform, which raises tremendous challenges. The democracy control will certainly be made by you, members of parliament and political decision makers, but I have been surprised for having listened to very interesting statements made so far, but we will have the opportunity of having, for instance, Mr. William Hubing, who is the president and the Foundation for Electoral Systems, and Inácio Sánchez Amor, who is the President of Democracy and Humanitarian Issues of the OSCE, and the rapporteur will be Susana Amador. And we would like to start by asking each of these members of Parliament to have a 10-minute statement. And we would like to start with you, Professor Anatoly. So thank you very much. I would like to thank all the Portuguese authorities who have invited me to take to be a part of this conference. I will be addressing you in Russian, although my slides will be presented in English language. But despite anything else, what concerns me the most is that George Tetzarelli has just mentioned the fact that we have to put an end to war in our own hands, and only then can we reach the goals so that we can live in peace. And today, Europe is celebrating 73 years of victory against the Nazi Germans. And this is a symbol that I bring in my coat. This is the symbol of the victory of the over the Second World War. So in our days, the internet areas are very critical ones, and this does not mean only Russia. We know that there are many other countries which allow not only to the creation of difficult conditions when it comes to vis-a-vis other countries. For instance, Russia and other countries may claim claim what is the basis around the reason behind this threat, what is on their minds. And actually, this is the turning point for us to understand what is happening in terms of cyberspace and the problems related to representing by cyberspace. And along these lines, Russia has created a number of documents, strategic documents, and all of them are aimed at the development of the information society, and on the other hand, they aim at how should we defend ourselves around the cyberspace, who is also bringing about a number of risks and threats and problems. Russia, through its external policy, is clearly declared that Russia has addressed the UN and asked them to address this problem of the fight against threats that have been that the technological means are bringing about around the cyberspace. And the idea that has been proposed by Russia was not well accepted, and some countries have even criticized Russia due to this idea. And during this time, what happens is that we have lost track of time. So We simply lost time, and what we have seen today, information technologies are there, and they are more and more sophisticated. They are creating more and more a sphere and dimension so that terrorists may use the cyberspace for their intentions, in order to carry out their intentions. This is database records for the year 2017, and you can see how this cyberspace is becoming more and more complex, far more sophisticated, in order to be managed in a positively way so that we can fight criminality over the cyberspace. The criminals who are using ICTs show that these technologies are developing, and that even the criminals are the ones who are developing them. And as a society, we believe that the priority is this, or at least should be that, of drafting a universal device, a universal model, so that all of us could fight against this problem. Our conference is under the name of cyberspace. But look at this slide, information security, and this is the relationship between information and cybersecurity. So in terms of Russia has a very great understanding on this domain, but they only look at cyber when cyber is only a small part of the whole, that is part of the information and information security. And this has to do with the perception of the concept and the idea. And we also want to highlight that the trend is that Russia has created an association for information security, and this is of an international nature. And the Moscow organization, together with other Russian university, have also participated in this association. And the president of this association is indeed someone that is very well known to us, Mrs. Shestuk, who is the general director, and also a part of the presidium who is made of experts in the field of information and also in the field of information security. But there is an issue. What the threats that we are witnessing, the fact that we see very important board is to ensure this type of security. What is important for us, instead of regulating conflicts inside this OSCE, probably sometimes they have a passive role, a passive activity vis-a-vis what happens in the digital world. And this is a scandal. And has a witness thereof is the Cambridge Analytics. And this is not something which will endanger Cambridge, but Moscow. But they are criticizing Russia and not the UK. In Cyprus, for instance, all the WikiLeaks documents have been exposed via the US, and we knew that the US had information whereby third countries could be attacked under the flag of other countries, and this should be revealed who has been using the flag of another country to attack. And this is something that we should raise our awareness to. The Europolitics, Antonio Tajani, state the following. What is happening in this field? The OECD, after the decision of 2016, of 10th of March, many other decisions have been taken, and this have been effective decisions by showing a number of situations, but concretely, in terms of the international areas of information, this hasn't been tackled. And this is something we ought to bear in mind, especially when it comes to the expression used by the Nobel Prize when he stated the following. The fourth information, or the fourth information revolution, will bring about more threats. Because this is about revolutions that happen on an everyday manner and which we cannot trace. And therefore, Russia has a very rich experience in creating, in raising awareness, trust. For instance, the ideas that have been presented through 16 proposals in terms of trust concerning this matters that concerns us all, we have realized that this activity is very narrow. And therefore, in so doing, we are not acknowledging the real value of this organization. We are not enhancing its value. We only show these proposals just to show that other organizations are working in over the cyberspace, but they work separately and not together for one single goal. And there is no transparency in terms of decision making. And what shall we do? We should revive the Parliamentary Assembly to give more life and transparency so that they can act more lively and more transparent. And in Russia, a plan has been adopted. Mr. Shravot referred to the fact this is a cyber plan for the OSCE. One of the events which has to do with the role for the regulation of peace around conflict territories, this should be done under the flag of the OSCE. And this should be done under a more encompassing manner. And this is why we acknowledge today's conference in Lisbon, something very important. And we should create a group of specialists that should work strictly in the field of cyberspace security. The OSCE organizes two conferences. And other points of the plan have not yet been tackled. In December 2017, as you know, efforts by the OSCE were made in order to reduce risks when it comes to conflict and discussion, and the restructuring of the OSCE work was proposed in order to optimize their participation under the initiative of our Italian colleague in order to carry out a separate meeting of the committee in Vienna. So we expect that this year we will truly start to discuss the role of the OSCE in the field of the fight against cybercrime and cybersecurity. And our president yesterday, Putin, has signed a decree law to develop the country until the year 2024, and where he states everything that ought to be done in terms of cybersecurity and the fight against cybercrime. And all of these issues are written in the slide, which we, the interpreters, cannot look at the distance. But what we want to do is to ensure security in the cyberspace and fighting against crime over the cyberspace. And finally, my words are those of thanking for the invitation and to express my gratitude in being here with you.
Here, William Sweeney, que é o presidente e diretor geral internacional da Fundação.
William Sweeney.
First of all, let me thank the conference leadership for the invitation and the recognition of the International Foundation for Electoral Systems leadership in this space. I very much appreciate the opportunity to be here, as well as reacquaint myself with so many friends from different missions around the world, as we've all observed the development, growth, and protection of democracy. First of all, I want to say on behalf of Senator Roger Wicker and the other members of the U.S. delegation, they have apologized for not having a representation here. They are in session. I have talked with a number of them, and I am due to visit with them after the session, but they apologize for not being here and hope the leadership understands the conflict. They are quite interested in this topic for a variety of reasons, and as I say, I will be reporting back on what will be a successful conference. Secondly, on a personal basis, it is my great pleasure to be here to represent the International Foundation for Electoral Systems. IFES has been engaged in this space of providing protection and security to electoral management bodies for its existence of 31 years. I personally can remember doing political training in Hungary when the wall was still standing and Fidesz had an age limit of 35. I'm also privileged to have been an observer and witnessed the progress of democracy in Georgia and Ukraine, and even the 1994 Duma elections in Russia. So all of us are committed to this space and have spent long hours and long time thinking about it. On a personal basis, I'd also like to highlight that I spent 20 years of my life in the private sector working for an global information technology company, and the last 10 as global director of public policy. So all of these issues have been part of my life, my working life at IFES, as well as my working life at Electronic Data Systems. Well, I've got a few brief points to make. First of all, trust is a commodity that is critical to the election process. It is critical to the conduct of the election, everything from voter registration to actual voting and tabulation. It is critical to the outcome of the election, and it is critical to the acceptance of the legitimacy of the governments going forward to govern and fulfill their responsibilities to their citizens, regardless of who wins. That is why all of you have put your names on different ballots in different localities and are here. Trust is a commodity that cannot be built easily, but it can be lost very quickly. And what is happening right now is that the democratic process is under assault, and that assault is in part through cyberspace. It is also in part through the deployment of information technology weapons by a variety of actors and actresses. Let me start with one point that my conversation will be focused to you as legislators and what you can do going forward to include a critical element in this war to protect democracy and democratic systems, and that is by an increased focus on a body you might not think about very often when thinking about these issues. And I'm talking about the election commissions. I'm talking about the election management bodies. The world we deal in elections is one like everyone's world where everything is now connected. And if technology for IFAS a few years ago used to mean the integrity of different machinery for voting or for tabulation, well, that game has changed because all of the technology is connected. The cell phones are now used to transmit results and get instructions and do training. Printers for ballots are oftentimes connected. Identification systems are connected through laptops. All of these technologies are coming together in a way that does not increase trust in the process, but actually gives the opportunity to be very suspicious and for rightful reasons. The attack on the democratic process now is constant. There is a challenge by local partisans, different political actors trying to play upon suspicions as to whether or not the outcome is rigged, fueled in part by political consultants who will take, as political consultants do, suspicion of the governability of the country, of the effectiveness of public institutions, as a way to set themselves apart and gain local advantage, either directly in the election or in a negotiation after the election. We have seen in multiple countries media sponsored by different partisans being directly used to both send false information, misleading information, and try and affect the process on behalf of one political side at the expense of another. We have seen in many countries a foreign intervention by materials traced back to actors and actresses outside of that nation's boundaries, using both information platforms in the private sector, such as Facebook, Twitter, Google, and others, as well as direct interference of actions by election commissions. And one of the issues around this space that we all have to be sensitive to is that, say, you have a house, and at the front of the house there are muddy footprints and there are fingerprints on the windowsill, but your house was not broken into. So is your house secure? If I carry this to an election, if someone came up and broke through your system and left evidence that they broke through your system, but they never took, that you know of so far, data, or they misuse the data, does that make the citizen trusting in the electoral process? And this goes directly to information integrity. And for election management bodies, their highest goal is to maintain the integrity of the voting list, maintain the personal privacy and trust of the citizen who went and registered to vote and said they were eligible in the process of determining the fate of their country. When there is an effort to go after that voting list, either by thieves or by foreign powers or by local political agents in an inappropriate way, it damages the democratic process. As importantly, it raises great fear that simply by changing a few digits or changing the spelling of a few names, that you create chaos at the polls because you, the voter who has shown up, registered, perhaps has a special ID, is not the person on the list that the poll worker is going to work with. With the integration of new biometrics and more complicated ways to ensure and guarantee the integrity of the vote and the voter, all of that information is maintained digitally. All of that information is at risk. And the first indication, if no one's detected an intrusion, will be on election day, as William Sweeney with three E's in Sweeney shows up, and my name is only one E in Sweeney, and a poll worker says, you might have the card, it might look like you, but that's not the name on the list. And so information integrity and privacy are two mandates of election management bodies that are very much at risk as we talk about this space. The other great lesson from the presidential election of the United States, and one that I want to highlight here, is the question of information sharing. Now, I know the progress that the European Union and other bodies are making in terms of bringing law enforcement, military information, intelligence sources into a forced sharing of their information so as to facilitate greatest protection. A body that none of you are thinking of are election management bodies. So what happened in the United States is that when there was detection of intrusions into voter files and other systems maintained by our independent election authorities, number one, there was no one, none of those authorities had a security clearance to receive the information. So if I were with the FBI or the CIA or the Department of Homeland Security or any other source of that information, I, as a representative of that government body, could
Please,
not
Ms.
go...
Sweeney, the time.
Sir, two minutes. Could not go to my friend Isabel and tell her, and there was not an information protocol in place, and those two mandates have to come from governments as far as security preparations. Final point I want to make is you have to look at the job description and the budgets of election management bodies in a whole new way. Election management chairmen are now, and chairwomen are going to be the front lines of the defense of the integrity of the voting process, and we're not just talking about election day. They will need both communications and security budgets that no one has anticipated, because we never thought they would be the defense of democracy in the public arena from the first day of the election period, from the first day that a voter registers to vote. But that's the new reality. Thank you.
Muito obrigado. Ouvimos agora Ignacio Sanchez.
Thank you very much. We will now listen to Mr. Sanchez Amor, who in the Parliamentary Assembly of the OSCE. Thank you very much, dear moderator, and I would like to greet the Portuguese delegation in the Parliament and also colleagues such as Paulo Pisco and Jorge Lacão. I will try to speak Portuguese, but not Portuñol. And if I have, if I make some mistake, I'm sure my colleague Susana will help me out. I am not a politician. I am a journalist. So I cannot claim that I am an expert in cybersecurity. My only specialty is indeed constitutional right. And I have been in this parliament for many years now under that capacity. And in many years, it was not easy to tell apart one phenomena from the other. We had the feeling that all of this field of policy that has to do with cybersecurity was the part of the same atmosphere. And I think that the thing I now sedimenting, and so we have now the idea of cyber and fake, because one thing is cyber threat and other thing is fake news. And all of this new way of disseminating information has to do with postmodern irrationality, which has brought about the idea of alternative facts. And this is what brought about the idea of irrational things. And we know to what type of societies do these concepts lead to. Fake news are something very old. I won't talk about the propaganda carried out by the Sumerian kingdom. I'm just talking about news ever since the press has been invented. And this in Lisbon, one of the events which has been more notorious in Europe was the earthquake of 1875. And the fact is that this earthquake has brought about a type of literature which has to do with a successful type of information that has reached Europe. It became so much notorious, if not universal, at least within the European world. So the universality of news is part of the risk we are examining. And today we have viral news in our social media, and the effect is the same. But we have to tell apart cyber threats from those threats using cybernetic devices to scatter them around the world. Because, for instance, we have other ways of reaching different levels of audiences. For instance, the spear program and a malware. This is a weapon, and this is a form of aggression that has to be taken as a threat. On the other hand, this is fake news or misinformation is reaching higher levels of the population thanks to misinformation, but cyber and its relations with the fake news is only a vehicle on which this can be tackled, and also a vehicle which touches many higher level of audience. On the other hand, classic hackers, when they were able to break through the system security, they only left a signature. It was just to say that I was there, I had access to that information, and this was all. But now the cyber threats and the malware, the purpose of them is to destroy information, not only to hide information, but also to reveal information. WikiLeaks phenomena or the Panama Papers, or even the mails by Mrs. Clinton, these are a real information, true information, but they were under legal protection, which has been breached. But not all these instruments are only used to disseminate fake news, but also to disseminate this type of mark of fake news. But the purpose of fake news is disinformation, and this aims at a political field, and this has to do with harming political makers. Let me talk to you about some of the political consequences of this. In the past, we had uninformed citizens who did not have access of information means. Well, as now, we also have them. We also have citizens who are also more badly informed because they do not have access to quality level information. information, and so that it's difficult for them to tell apart a news for a fake news. So this excess information and all this noise is requires, I believe, that we should tell or at least disclose the political goals that have to be reached. Some of them are naive or around marketing level just to send a page with advertising ad. But on the other hand, let me join to my Russian colleague. We also have this conspiracy theories around the fake news, and we also have fake news about fake news. And the idea around the flag operations, whereby one agent can enter into a server and say that this was done under the flag of another country. This is fake news, no doubt, but the fact that this brings about disinformation, this will corrupt democratic attitudes. Those who are the believers, who believe in any fake news, are the ones who simply do not want real news. And this has been determined by psychology in terms of fake news. The only way to reach the users is by encapsulating these personal ideas and not allow for different ideas to be brought to light. And during the election, as William Sweeney said, this is the effect. The effect is not by changing the numbers of 5 or 3 status, which can be decisive on a presidential election in the USA. The purpose is to create chaos, is to corrode legitimacy and the loyalty and of electoral systems. And this is far more fruitful from the political point of view rather than trying through cyber means to change the numbers within an election, because this will be far more long-lasting effect, which will bring about a new type of constituencies which will be encapsulating around damages, and which will, of course, be the result of the ideas that are created by fake news. And then there is also a very dangerous situation that in less mature democracy of accumulating technical guarantees to have a far more a system such as a paper and a pencil. And because those democracy who have the need to create bigger transparency and to have great levels of technologies, and this become far more vulnerable, because just like William said, they will allow far more doors to enter into the system. What is the effect of fake news that are continuously fed by these fake news agencies? This is the complete polarization of society. Because if we feed up these damages around this social medium, and this is similar, or if you only receive these ideas only by Twitter, it therefore confirming their own ideas, the effect is to encapsulate thinking and polarize society, and the political effect will certainly be very important. And of course, we have an idea that a pact is always betrayal to ideas, and an extreme ideology polarization will be much more difficult. And I wonder whether our colleague in case of Italy may also say that the polarization will make it far more difficult to reach a political pact. And I think that this can be dealt with technically, but the problem is when this technical threats reach this eighth passenger, and then I mean disinformation, and this is far more harmful for the public opinion. It is easier for me to track a malign problem than a damage on someone else's minds. And so this is an effect of this type of idea. So what to do in times like this? Let me tell you that in a work by Olina Pelyakova, I found a very good proximity to what can be done by public powers, private companies, and also by information professionals. And this is to adopt a new way of fighting against fake news by making a critical thinking through regulation. The commissioner said something like regulation is needed. If the actors that determine this fake news. So I would like to end with an idea that has been introduced in the Spanish Constitution. The right of information is the right of information veraz, which is truthful. I mean, more truthful than the truth. And so this idea may be a way of getting closer to the producers of information. And thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to be here with you.
Obrigado. Vamos ter 10 minutos.
We'll have now a period of questions for 10 minutes before we draw to a close.
Muito bom dia a todos.
Good morning. I'm João Rocha Pereira. I'm a criminalist and international consultant and on safety and security. I'd like to thank for the invitation to be here. I'd like to greet the Vice Chairman of the Assembly of Republic, deputies, Member of Parliament, speakers, all the entities here, ladies and gentlemen. One of my great concerns in this area, I appreciated very much all your presentations and like to greet all the speakers, but you are quite right regarding what you said, but very often we forget something, that is, the costs aimed at prevention are not an expense, but rather an investment. And very often we, because of deficits and troikas and other similar problems, we tend to do some blind cuts in the prevention area, and we must not cut expenses in that important area. If we do not invest in this area, we are going to have very unpleasant things, and we'll have much loss. I'd like to draw your attention to that and alert, and I'd like to have the opinion of the speakers. And as our representative from Russia said, it's important to eliminate war from our mind to reach peace. But we must, to do that, we must do prevention first. That's my idea here, and I'd like to have your comments on that. Thank you. Other comments, please? You're right, sir. We have to change the minds of the political agents, and the change that this cyber threat must be dealt with the same budget or money care. It's defense. So we must change our minds and must use defense funds instead of buying tanks or missiles. You must invest in that, because this is the new threat, so you know, it must be dealt with the same way as before regarding they are introducing the idea of cyber defense must be introduced in the budget lines of defense and use that money. And then a first here. Good morning. I'd like to greet all the participants. I'd like to greet Mr. Ignacio Amor as well. I have a question to Mr. Sweeney regarding what you just said. You said that our democracies are under attack, and the way you expressed that also show that indicate that you think of a great vulnerability in our democracy. So there is a certain paradox in the fact that in Portugal and in Europe, we try to develop the information technologies appropriated to electoral processes. And my question is, in particular, for the electronic vote on online vote, what is the type of reality that we are faced with? The application of this is going to make stronger democracies or going to make the democracies more vulnerable? What do you think, sir?
Let me take this in two parts. First, in terms of voting by internet or online, the greatest challenge in that space is, how do I know it is really you who are voting? How do I put in place an identification process that identifies that the voter is you? Now, some countries have invested heavily in this question. Estonia has, Switzerland and Norway have both done pilots. And they still come back to the question, can they be certain it really is you and not someone who has stolen your identity, as the slide from our Russian colleague showed, the amount of identity theft going on, or is someone voting in the name of another, maybe a child, maybe a spouse, maybe other household members of a clan or whatever. So that's the first issue. The global default has been to have paper backup, and even countries that have used electronic voting on a massive scale, such as India, are now developing new machinery that does have a paper backup. But the third issue involved with all of this is whether or not the system is safe from interference. And Estonia in particular has had numerous outages and interferences with their system by actors outside of their nation's borders. So those are the three issues that need to be overcome. I completely concur with my colleague. These monies have to be spent both to protect the systems that are in place and to bring the systems that are in place up to global standards. The worst example, frankly, being the United States, where the average age of a voting machine, with or without a paper backup in the United States, is older than the Apple iPhone 1. That's the lack of investment that's been made in this space.
Muito
obrigado, Excelência Simões. Obrigado, Simões. Sou deputado do Partido Socialista da Assembleia da República e queria trazer esta discussão para um ponto de vista histórico. Não me parece que haja...
I would like to come back from an historical perspective. I think there's no news. The news is only about the use of tools. If we look at the campaigns by Alexander the Great, we have elements that identify fake news of counter-information and also on how to conquer territories through information. And since all of us minimally informed around political issues, if we look Machiavelli, we won't find any reasons beyond those who are around the control of information that we have now. So the issue we are now tackling has to do with the spraying of technology. When I look at the introduction of Spanish constitution, the topic, the word of true, which leads to the philosophical discussion, leads us to know how are we to know who will be a fake news, who will determine what a fake news is all about. And how are we paving our way in order to build a more and more democratic society, bearing in mind that a fake news today can become a true news tomorrow? These discussions are very important to crystallize information at a certain point in time, but we also should make progress in order to make other social universe where the center of power is no longer around the center of institutions, but around the organized centers. This is a provocative interference or opinion, not just to confront ideas, but just that we should think of it. Are we facing an attempt of totalism of states when it comes to the freedom of information? Thank you very much.
This idea was introduced by me in these... But there is a huge difference between now and what happened in the past. It was not so in the times of the earthquake of Lisbon. It went for three, four years, the reaction to that. So, but now it's a universal, we have universal and immediate reactions. Now, regarding the concept and the right to receive veracious information, this type of true information, the concept of veracious in Spanish is not the same as really true. It is of trust, and it has a constitutional content, and this was determined by the Constitutional Court to say that this information is veracious or not, if reliable, if it was made on a professional basis, but if the professional of information did it, then you can consider that as a veracious or reliable information. And this is in the article of the liberty of information, of protection of information. It is not about giving the right to the states to say what is true or not. That is the risk that my colleague said, but if there are legal or juridical elements and that you can treat that information, I think that is a way of Veras. In Spain, there was an offer of jobs for journalists, and that was publicized. And one of the conditions was to have ability to find news. That's what you ask from a journalist. I agree with risk, but I think that it may be just a way of facing a subject.
Very briefly,
rapidement.
More to my private sector technology background, and the challenge to legislators is whether or not you're using the windshield in front of you to accept the facts as they are and where all of this is going, or you prefer to focus on the rearview mirror. And I would suggest very strongly that this threat moves faster than the legislative political process, and you as legislators have to use the windshield rather than the rearview mirror to frame the debate. I know that we can spend the rest of the day on that sentence, but there is a point of attitude as to how you approach the greatest disruptor since the Industrial Revolution that we have all been dealing with for most of our professional lives, and that's called the Internet Revolution, the digital era, whatever we want to call it, that we are going through. And it moves far, far faster than the movement of Alexander the Great's armies.
Muito obrigado. Temos a última pergunta. Alguém se tinha escrito aqui, sim.
Last question now. Thank you. I'm Petrok. I'm a member of the Social Democratic Party on behalf of the Assembly of the Parliament. My question goes in the sense that technology has invaded our daily life. No one wants to abdicate that. But I think that the level of the general public, they are not aware of the threats. What happened with the Cambridge Analytics recently came to show that. But people tend to go immediately to their routine. I depend on a great deal of technology, but being aware always of the threat that is there, it is invisible, right? It's not as in a fire when we see the smoke, but it has to do with also with elections. If televote, the possibility of distance voting, remote voting, represents a greater democratic participation, but the fact that you cannot guarantee who is behind on the other end of the line is the voter really? That poses a problem. So up to what point, like more traditional systems, like the Portuguese, that is a rather simple system, and proof of any type of attack. So it's a paper, a pen, and a voter in a booth. This is not very effective and maybe not so democratic in the sense that there are many people who are not going to show in the booth. But this is maybe more resilient, maybe more proof effective.
I think the of voting is embraced and trusted by millions of people around the world, and we see evidence of that in high participation rates and acceptance of results and legitimacy of governments as a result. We also see questions as to whether or not the systems have been attacked either by domestic political actors for their own partisan goals or by other actors, be they criminal or whatever. The issue of integrity of that process is demonstrated almost on a weekly basis around the world in that people vote with their feet. And they show up and they vote and the systems work that confirm the identity that they have registered in that entirely appropriate way. The question for this forum is whether or not that trust can be maintained and protected. The earlier gentleman's question on transferring to voting online it's a serious question as to how I can prove that it really is you who's casting the vote in your pajamas in your bedroom. I don't know that as an election management official, and there's a lot of work to try and prove it. But that's a central question of the Internet and a central vulnerability, as we saw on the slide on identity theft and other types of malicious attacks on files. And the only answer in part to all of those questions is, first of all, to invest in protections around the integrity of those systems, both to catch any attempt at intrusion, as well as to deflect the opportunity for intrusion. And one of the reasons why I say to you as legislators, you've got to think of election management bodies in a whole different way, because they traditionally are not included in areas of greatest state investment in protection of privacy and integrity of systems. That's usually reserved for your national defense, things critical to the nation's well-being. Those individual records are now quite important, quite vulnerable, and critical, particularly if you want to adopt technologies to permit online voting. And an area in this space that all of you should be concerned about is how the diaspora votes, particularly displaced populations, due to war, economic conflict, disaster, be it caused by weather or whatever, that has caused great dislocations in terms of a population. So just to throw a quick one out, how do you reconstitute Syria if almost a majority of the population is now outside of Syria, and Syria's election law says you vote in the town of your original residence, and so you've got almost half the population out of the country and more than 80% of the country dislocated from town of original residence, according to most statistics. So how do you use the electoral process to put Syria back together? And then how do I know you as a refugee who left all your papers behind for whatever reason really are you who has standing to vote as a Syrian? It's going to be a major question for all of you to grapple with in the years ahead.
I would like to underline some hints on the issue, because I think that electoral machinery is just a consequence of the reliability of the political system. In my country, the results of the election never has been challenged by anyone, any party, any media. That creates the ambience for working very simply. In Spain, you approach the board, you show your ID, and your name, you don't have to sign, your name has been ticket, and you vote, and it's finished. I remember the last time I was the special coordinator in Armenia. In Armenia, it's absolutely full procedures, technicals, signatures, the things on the sales. And I remember perfectly when President Sargsyan approached to the first machine, and there was the machine didn't recognize the passport of the president. There was about 15 minutes of tension. That's 15 seconds of tension. I could imagine that 15 seconds of tension in the head of the guy who introduced the idea of that side. But if your system is not reliable, if there is no truth, there is no confidence in the political system, you have to overlap layers and layers of t- technical guarantees. And finally, you are, as I said before, that renders the system more vulnerable than the older one, Papel and Canet.
Muito obrigado. Vamos encerrar com...
To close this session.
По этой теме технологический процесс стремительно развивается. Я говорил об искусственном интеллекте. Уже есть законопроекты об искусственной, об электронной личности, в том числе в Эстонии, в Швейцарии, о чем уже говорил коллега. И в этом контексте я бы хотел привлечь внимание, что Россия вместе со странами Шанхайской организации сотрудничества внесла проект в ООН об ответственном поведении государств в информационном пространстве, где все эти угрозы, подмены, в том числе личности, электронной личности, голосования, интернет-голосования и иные, учтены. Это для информации. Спасибо.
I'm sorry, there were no
There was no... Yes. There was no translation, says the lady. Into English, maybe. Oh. We're going to close. It's not going to be easy, but before everything, I'd like to thank all of you for the wealth of your presentations. It was a high-quality panel, and I'll do my best to make a summary. I'd like to greet also the facilitator and dear speakers, colleagues, and guests for all societies that plunge in a logic of networking are also, and with the internet, with the development of communication networks and economic globalization, and with the concept of smart societies. This turn tends to grow as well as the risks. And the cyberspace is seen also as a space of liberty, but history teaches us that without that, there's no liberty. Security is needed to that. And the problematic of cybersecurity is a must. We live in a time that is dominated by virtual, with all the threats and the dangers of a reserved space. Cyberspace dominates life of many millions of individuals, companies, and government institutions, both at the domestic level as well as international. It is obvious that there are crime and menaces, and that want to manage this and creating threats to the space of liberty and the space of security and justice. Sir Julian King, the European Commissar that we heard on video, spoke about the transparency of this cybernetic world. He also stressed the importance of this Lisbon conference and the fact that our daily life is surrounded by technology and all the tasks of our daily life take place in a space where internet is present and overwhelming. There are many opportunities, but there's also a bleak side to it, and cyber attacks invade the virtual space and the infrastructures of companies and states. The motivations, as Sir King mentioned, are of financial nature, but also there are political grounds to it. That with all the modern states must cooperate on a central basis. Sir Julian King gave us an important overview about the measures and the legislative package that aim at increasing the resilience of the European Union and increase safe security, considering that social networks, Twitter, Facebook, must be more collaborative and be more responsible. So we must attribute a mandate to the agency of for security of networks and establish a legal framework. Julie King said that it is fundamental to reinforce this resiliency, and the agency for the European Union is also a key word. He spoke about the interest, strategic interest of the European Union to make sure that the technological measures of are developed so that digital economy increases and also reinforce democracy and the protection of the informatic material. He spoke about the action plan to define the way how Europe and the member states may react very quickly. More cooperation, more enforced international cooperation, and also an effective response at the penal level. And we spoke about the need of investing in competencies and in research, and also react to fake news.
You also referred that there should be zero tolerance to terrorist acts and that they should be refused. We cannot share negative messages. I also referred that this is a never-ending work, and this is very important for digital literacy, which should be guaranteed as a means to fight against those campaigns which lead to fake news, manipulation in legal areas, which should safeguard electoral means. Anatoly Smirnov has intervened, alerting us for the fact that wars start in the heads of all of us and that to reach peace should be an imperative. The internet space is a creative one, but more and more critical, and which entails mutual confidence among the countries. This is a more sophisticated space, and cybercrime requires more and more advanced means by the state. According to Anatoly Smirnov, this should be the universal model to reinforce the concept of cyberspace, which should be dealt with in a whole area. Also referred that the OSCE should have a more leading role on this field, and on the other hand, that the increase of mutual mistrust should be decreased. He also referred with the interference of electoral campaigns in many countries in the world, which, as it is the case of Cambridge Analytics. It is also important that we should also acknowledge ITCs to become more and more resilient, and this hasn't been possible due to organizational issues, because this only works under a platform which works on ITC platforms, and it is fundamental that OSCE may resuscitate by ensuring more security in the use of ICT by optimizing their work around this topic. Also reinforced the importance of the acts of the foreign of the Conference of the Foreign Minister of Hamburg, and that that plan hasn't lost relevance at all. And this should also streamline the processes inside the OSCE. The industrial platform will also bring about new threats, and that Russia has a very rich knowledge and platform to contribute to this, and thus we should bring about more strength so that we can work as one by creating experts which can help us work more and together in the cyberspace. Now, I would like to refer to Mrs. William Sweeney's intervention. He is the President for Electoral Campaign System. He says that we should be more and more committed around this electoral system. And this actually, he has always been connected around this system throughout his lifetime. Trust is fundamental to ensure fundamental electoral systems. He talked about the need for us to be attentive to the assault of the democratic values in the cyberspace that is critical and is a threat to democracy we cannot accept. We live in an ever-changing world, and that all technology are in connection and they are together, and therefore this makes the system even more vulnerable. And there are, of course, more threats to the most vulnerable actors, and it is important that system policies may have a fund to go on advocating the rural state so that there will be no manipulation or that may threat the role of states. Google and Twitter may bring about potential disruptions. I also draw your attention for the need of integrity of information, for the privacy of the individual elector. And if we do not guarantee privacy of elector, we will then put the democratic process at risk. It is therefore fundamental that to implement all set of measures that can detect intrusions, and that the case of the U.S. elections have been an example, and we should therefore make it far more resilient, and knowing that it is important to guarantee that this is a field of safety for the citizens. On the other hand, the next speaker referred to the fact that the cybersecurity should not have murky waters. It should only bring about the functionality of the system. Fake news, as he referred, are something which date back the past. This is not a new reality, but fake news have found around the cyberspace a channel that has a vast auditorium, and the classic hacker only left their signature. Whereas today, their impacts are far more corrosive, such as the WikiLeaks, the Panama Papers, and Hillary Clinton emails have been proof. And also the purpose of fake news are aim at disinformation, and they serve manipulative purpose. Mr. Sanchez Amena said that yesterday citizens did not have full access to information, and this was a danger to democracy. But today they have access to information, which is not safe. And this is also a deficit, the fact that this is also a jungle, a digital jungle, whereby citizens tend to get lost, and this also implies the loss of democracy. And when this happens, we have to carry out regulation, regulation and regulation, just like the European Union is urging us to do. Prevention is also an investment, the need for democracy, and also the fact that the ICTs may find solutions for more resilience. The novelty is not the use of this tool, but what is done with the manipulation of information and the spraying of technology. So we have to find more balance, and we can't make a fortress that is even more perverse, nor can we create limitations to information. Technology has invaded our daily life, but this individual mind should be aware of this. And also the conclusion, dear colleagues and speakers, our new technologies create new opportunities and threats which cross democracies. Also, the information that circulates and its dissemination in social media bring about very serious information in moderating information, especially when this is massified at the service of campaigns that are aimed at disseminating wrong information campaign and therefore be corrosive. And so the state action should promote digital literacy in order to protect against manipulation in digital spaces, and also by strictly acting in the field of protection of databases, and also by limiting channels that will act clearly in order to the OSCE may reinforce itself as a dialogue, as a platform by creating confidence-building measure, because we should allow for more resilient democracy, which should also advocate values such as freedom and justice. And we must make our voice be heard now, if not ever. Thank you.
Muito obrigado a todos. Temos coffee break.
Thank you very much. We have a coffee break.